private practice playbook. Playbook. It's a private practice playbook. Playbook. Welcome. Here we are. Time for another podcast. So, you know, just a reminder, these podcasts are designed to be thought-provoking, to tell stories, and in general, what we're trying to get you to do, and really sort of my gift to the profession, is to maybe see things in a different way. And one of the great ways of doing that is to bring people on who are in your profession, do what you do, have similar life experiences, and we'll talk through some of their journey. So, Dr. Keelan, super glad to have you with me today. Thank you for taking the time. And so, I'm assuming it's a little colder where you are today than here.
It is, yes, yeah, but in the mid 20s today.
Okay. But any snow? I saw. I actually went to the dentist this morning, and they had the news on, so I did see that there was a snowstorm in the Northeast. Is that?
There was. Yeah, okay. They told us we were going to get snow, but it's all east. Okay. So, I actually had a meeting. A guy got snowed in, so he couldn't come in to see me.
Excuses, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, first of all, thank you again for taking time. So, it's crazy to think that you've been a Scheduling Institute client since 2013. Is that, do you think that's right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Okay. Okay. So, really 10 years, right? Just for fun, do you remember how you got to us? Like, I don't remember off the top of my head. Do you remember what the first interaction was or?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been practicing since 89, so 30 some years. And I've had a series of consultants mm-hmm. over the years, none of them that really, you know, took off. But I think I got an invitation to a webinar that through Dental Town.
Okay.
That you were putting on. And I think that was when you were starting to roll out the 5X
okay.
vision.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been practicing for a long time. Like a lot of the guys that I've heard, you know, on these podcasts, just really digging into the clinical world, trying to become like this super clinician. But you know, just financially not really making the kind of money I wanted to, but also like I was at a point in my faith where I was feeling very compelled to be giving back, being a more generous person.
Interesting.
And actually had met with my pastor about doing some things with the church and just was really convicted that I wasn't able to contribute more. And then you give this talk on the 5X doctors and your vision, you know, about us making, you know, $1 million a year and giving mm-hmm. back 10%. I was like, man, like what an amazing vision. And you were about to have a meeting in Atlanta. And I can't remember which one it was at that point. Conversion Comply, I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
But I went to my wife and I said, hey, I want to go to Atlanta and hear this guy speak. And she's like, we're not hiring another consultant. I'm like, no, he's got some really good speakers. Like, why don't you come with me? We'll go sit, you know, go to this meeting. And so then we went through the first couple of speakers. Dr. Cialdini spoke, and then you had a little breakout session. And funny, actually, as we were seeing some of the other like lunch breaks and stuff, there were a bunch of guys there that have been going to the same clinical mentor mm-hmm. that I have. And every one of them was like either in the 5X program or had done, you know, platinum or gold. So I was like, all right, smart guys. We have a very similar philosophy about how we practice dentistry. But we go to this breakout session. I'm sitting with my wife. Now, my wife, you know, is in the business world. She worked in sales and stuff. And as soon as you were done talking, she's like, go sign up with this guy. Like, he knows what he's talking about. And so, you know, you definitely hit a chord with us in terms of, you know, how you think about money. And, and again, the whole generosity thing is really what was the hook that got me.
So, yeah, I mean, that brings up a really interesting point. Thank you for sharing that. By the way, that has been the mission of mine for a long time. And I love the fact that, you know, it's crazy to think about this. You know, you have had a 568% increase in collections since that time and over a 1,100% increase in new patients over 10 years. So, listen, and you know, we don't, obviously we're here to help, and but that's a pretty amazing run. So pretty wacky to think about what's happened in your practice over 10 years, right?
Well, it is crazy.
Like shocking, right? I have the numbers. We don't need to share every number, but you know, let's just say that, you know, you might be talking about, you know, certainly you have gone 5 times larger, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So the promise of, you know, a lot of people, like, they, you know, when we did 5X, like I wasn't taking it, you know, you literally have gone 5X, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
okay.
This year, because we opened a second office last year, like it'll be 10X. We'll be 10X after 11 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, so you've been married for 37 years. Wow, and you look so young. That's so funny to me, right? Is that?
Thanks. Yeah, we were 23. We were pretty young when we got married.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So that's, you know, and I bring that up because I think it's pretty important. And four kids? You have four, right?
Children.
Okay. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Your oldest being 33 down to 20. Or is there going to be a dentist out of any of those children? Do you foresee that occurring?
So my third child is a daughter, and she is a dental hygienist.
Okay.
She works in our practice. And the summer in high school, she was thinking about it. I made her come and work in the office as an assistant. And at the end of the summer, it was a heartwarming for me. She's like, well, I never realized how hard you work. So
that's funny.
All right. That was good. And then my son, my younger son, is at Ohio State right now. He's a junior. So 2 summers ago, I told him, like, once you come in and work with me, because I don't want you to be a 35-year-old bitter engineer thinking I should have bought dad's practice. So he came in and worked in the practice. And what you do is really cool, but not what I want to do.
Okay.
And my other daughter's an engineer, and my oldest son was our first marketing director. So he went to a number of SI events.
That's awesome. Okay. So let's go back to the original proposition, right? So how do you end up, you know, how do you make the call to become a dentist? And do you remember like what the driving force was, or what experience? And I always ask that question because I think, as you know, I know you know, when you think about your community, right? There's a lot of people who look up to you just now, the sheer size of your business and its impact. And you recently won, you know, an award for being impactful in your community, right? Which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So take me back to the original, why'd you become a dentist? I mean, what was the driving force behind that?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly kind of fell into dentistry. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to be in the healthcare professions, and one of my heroes growing up was actually Hawkeye Pierce on MASH.
Oh.
So I thought like I wanted to be a trauma surgeon. I guess what I wanted to do. So I went to my undergrad. I went to Pitt, and like the first week, snuck my way into the medical school library, pulled open some books of the Journal of Traumatic Medicine, and almost tossed my cookies looking at, you know, some of the photos and stuff in there. But like I knew I wanted to do healthcare, medicine in some way. But one summer, couldn't find a summer job. I had stayed at school. My brother had a job working for an oral surgeon who was building a building, just doing construction. Hmm. And my brother got another opportunity. So he left and asked me to fill in that job. So I was wheeling wheelbarrows of concrete and gravel around for an oral surgeon. And when things got slow, his wife said, hey, why don't you come in and help me with some billing? And so I did paperwork for them. And then I went in and watched him do surgery. And it's like, all right, I think I would like to go down dentistry, that route. And then when I did my dental school interviews, the guy's like, you know, Paul, before you can become an oral surgeon, you have to be a dentist. And yeah, whatever I got to do. But I ended up liking more the interaction that you had with patients. In dental school, you'd have, you know, a handful of patients you kind of walk through your whole dental career, realizing like an oral surgeon, you're going to, you know, rip some 18-year-old kid's wisdom teeth out and probably never see them again, not really have that relationship. So I really enjoyed that part of dentistry, and that's why I chose just to stay in general dentistry as opposed to specializing.
Well, I think it's a good reminder that every day, you know, when there's young people around us, that you just never know, you know, what could cause a person to be. And I think it's a great, just a great reminder of being, being nice and kind to the people around us. And, you know, it's just funny. The other day I was standing somewhere and just randomly this guy's like, well, what do you do? You know, it's funny. It's like, and there was this part of me, I was like, do I really have to answer this? But then I caught myself and I was like, this kid just wants to have a conversation. He's trying to find his future, you know? So it was like, okay, take a deep breath and let him be part of that. So you go, you fulfill the dream of becoming a dentist. What happens then? Like, do you go to work for somebody? Do you put your own shingle out? What was the journey like?
Yeah. Because I kind of fell into dentistry and I had no idea really what the life of a dentist would be like. And so I came out and I did a GPR type residency at the University of Pittsburgh. And then I got a job with a guy who had a practice, very well-to-do practice in downtown Pittsburgh. Just wasn't a good fit for me. And then I ended up going into the corporate route for a couple of years, okay. For a multi-group practice. So saw a lot of dentistry, got my speed up, learned a lot of how to do things. And then I think like most of us, I had an itch. I wanted to have my own, you know, place. Mm-hmm. And an opportunity came up in my town where I am now. And so a lot of practice and, you know, came here. And yeah, it was, I think over a time, probably 3 or 4 dentists that have retired that we kind of rolled up into our practice.
So let's talk a little bit about, and, you know, I know you, you know, on a personal level, and I know that obviously you're active in the church and your faith and your beliefs are important to you. How have you been able to, like, how have you found, you know, being a dentist and attempting to kind of live out that faith and your belief system, and how has that been for you during your career? I'm kind of curious, you know, have there been challenges? Have you found it easy? Is there any kind of looking at it? Is there anything that stands out to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think most, you know, the beginning of my career was really about growing, you know, all my clinical skills and, thinking that, you know, if I were to just become a really good clinician, the whole world would be drawn to me because I was such a wonderful clinician. And,
did you find that to be true or did that not?
No, I mean, no, it definitely was not true. So, you know, you end up becoming, oh, he's the expensive dentist. He's the dentist that doesn't take insurance. He's the, or who's that? I've never even heard of him. I was building that had, you know, multiple professionals in it with a little sign, so people didn't even know really who I was, unless I went to school with my kids or something like that.
And that happens to a lot of doctors, right? I mean, a lot of them, when you look back, do you think there was a level of clinical, almost like a piousness to it? Or how did you see it?
I mean, absolutely. So again, I did most of my training in one place. So it does become, you're sort of holding people up to this clinical standard. No one ever talks about, can you make a living doing that? And, you know, it just becomes, you know, trying to sell someone, you know, you go take a class on veneers, like you want to sell veneers. Everyone doesn't want veneers. Yeah. Everyone doesn't have a problem with their TMJ. Yeah. So you're trying to sell solutions to problems people don't have. And that becomes very frustrating. And then also, I think at the time when we started with you guys, we were seeing maybe 9 new patients a month. And so every time you're doing a case presentation, like, this really, like, you got to nail it.
You got to
get this case to close. And so just a lot of pressure on you there. And I tell people, so again, my faith journey and how that kind of went out. Like, I there's Promise Keepers, the guy was talking about, you know, being an impactful person is not growing fruit on your own tree, which is really what I was doing. When I was sitting there trying to grow myself and become this great clinician and all this wonderful stuff would happen, like it was more like you grow by growing fruit on other people's tree. And that's what I found most rewarding about this journey. Like I have the clinical skills. I can do a lot of things that my associates can't do that other people in this town can't do. And it's definitely been an important part of our success. But like my assistants will tell you, like me being in a meeting, like I'm bored, but someone comes in and asks me a question. They're like, you can just see the light come on in my face. Like, oh yes, let me show you how to do that. Let me teach you how I did it. Show you where I did this the wrong way and how I learned that's not the way to do it. And that's really what, you know, excites me.
So thinking about that and trying to bring that to light for people. So here you are, you've got really good, you're getting clinical training, you know how to do something at elite level, you're attracting a whopping 9 patients a month. So you're saying that like you're at like a church meeting and they're trying to build something or do something and you're wanting to be more generous, but there really isn't the margin to be generous. So you end up somehow coming to me. And so I give this speech about, okay, hey, here's this diagram, right? And, you know, like there's a new level of this. I mean, so when we think about that, the impact, particularly when you describe the impact on people. So over the last 10 years, and let me make some statements and you tell me if you see them as reality, how much more of a generous boss have you become? Like, how many feats of generosity have you displayed? And I know you're not trying to brag about it, that's not my point, but when you think about in the last 10 years versus maybe the 10 before that, how do you, you know, can you step back and look and see that a key to your success was actually being way more generous with your team? If it was information or exposure, like how do you kind of see that now looking back at it?
Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier today. So like, you know, I would go off to the Mecca, you know, and do this continuing education and build myself. And, you know, my staff either took the day off or whatever. Mm. They weren't really like, well, what's he doing out there? You know, where now, like we just had a training on Friday, a leadership training. So yeah, 12, okay, you know, women there learning from Jessica ways to lead their teams, building rocks, how to just be effective leaders. Wednesday, we have a training here for our call center people. And we have we're doing 2 trainings. We're having call center training and an assistant training. And the people, like when I get a new person here and they see who are these people that are showing up, and they are just blown away that the training, the level of training that we do. And then the hygienists are like, well, what are we going to do? So our hygienists they put together their own training. So they're going to be training. So,
Totally different feel of an organization, right? So you're doing 5 times and you're going to get to 10 times the mathematically, but the key is that you've got individuals that are taking massive ownership in the process of serving the patients, right?
Yep.
How off were you on really being patient-centric? Like, I don't think you would have thought you weren't patient-centric back then, right?
No, I mean, one of the things that you would say to us that, like, because we talk about money, like we'll get down and we talk about money. It's like, it's not about the money. All the money is telling you, you know, the market is telling you, are you creating a value? Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's any dentist listening to this that doesn't think that they're an above average dentist. They're better than most of the guys out there. But really, so here I am, I'm an elite trained dentist, and you know, I can get 9 new patients a month, and half the people don't know who I am. And so, like, that's the market telling you that you're not offering them what they want. And so a lot of your training, the Cialdini training, the different training, like, just sit down and listen to people and let them tell you, you know, what's important to them. And it's so much easier to help someone when that's what they want, and I'm not forcing something on them that I think is important, and it has no value to me.
Well, look, I see a lot of people get stuck in that, and you know, they, it's like, you know, they're going to take it to the bank with them, except there's no money, right? So, but just so everyone listening understands that, that transition. So again, I see this certainly that, and I appreciate you sharing that story, meaning that when you, if we run into each other at that point, and you know, most people don't think, they think they're doing everything right that they could be doing right. And, you know, the philosophy, I mean, the ironic part about it is that it basically means that you were blocking five times the number of people from coming in. Isn't that funny? Like when you think about it, like it's all, once you unblocked it, they all came in. Mm-hmm. It's hard to, that's hard to accept for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So let's talk about, so you start this journey, you start paying more attention, right? Is that to money, to creating value, to what the patients want, resistance from your team at first, compliance? What were the steps that you had to go through to get it?
My office manager at the time, so she got the old phone call, you know, thing. But she was wonderful. She was super nice to people on the phone. But she was on the phone with them for half an hour. Mm. And so you sit there and tell them that we're not answering the phone as effectively as we could. That isn't taken too well. And then, you know, you've got women who've been in dentistry. I think she'd been in probably 30 years. My other assistant, 25 years. And then you have, you know, a youngish trainer show up. And they're like, this young person is going to tell me more about dentistry. Mm-hmm. And it's like, open your ears. Like, it's not about the dentistry. It's about just people skills, listening to people. And, but I mean, we didn't have a lot of turnover initially. We had, it's been 10 years. So my staff's grown from 5 to 53. So, you know, a big change.
It's awesome.
In terms of that. I remember our first training, my one assistant or hygienist, she's been with me for 25 years now, but at the time, she's been through all those consultants. It's like, oh, well, here we go again. So she was probably the most resistant, but she was willing to do it because, you know, she believes in me, and she's now like my strongest, my hygiene team lead. Mm. And that team is solid. It is a really well fine tuned machine.
Well, you know, it's always funny, and I think you know this after 10 years, but, you know, one of the secret rules I've always had that people can't really see from the outside is that I always thought, you know, we should never teach anything in an office that isn't, you know, there's this concept of like fourth generation value, meaning don't teach anything that you wouldn't want to roll, you know, four generations. I mean, you know, not like there's things that pass generation to generation, alcoholism, abuse, you know, lots of things, you know, those things go by accident, but intentionally. So the fun thing for me is always when, you know, that people don't know that. So what you've done is you've had not only an impact on how they affected serving the patients, but you really had an impact on how they apply some of those formulas and universal truths in their own personal lives, right? Which is part of the mission,
the
right?
Financial training, like 2 years ago, last year we did the kickoff and they did a little slideshow, like a wrap up. And I think 9 of my employees bought their first home last year. And, you know, numbers of babies that were born. And yeah, but like, it teared me up. Like nine of them were able to go out and buy their first house because of what they're doing.
So awesome. Here. And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, and so the formula is if you create value, money follows. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's really interesting. And I think, you know, you usually have a great team and it's really fun to watch a team who, you know, good people be exposed to that and then what it does to their engagement. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that's fantastic. So you go from 5 to 55 people. So can we talk about I know, you know, we went through COVID and you have certain things, but can you talk a little bit about the, you know, a lot of people, when, you know, when the minute you said I have 55 staff or whatever, I was imagining somebody's ears just closing down. And I imagine them going, I never want to have 55 people. Right. So I remember when I didn't really like my employees, I think I had a handful of them, and the thought of having 100 of them or plus whatever would have driven me crazy. But I've learned over time that, so let's talk about that. Was there like a reality of that, that the truth is there's some scale in having those people that makes your life a little easier?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we have a vision statement and all these, you know, things that every practice does, but we'll have some posting, something that happens in our Slack or whatever. And it's just like, who came up with that? Like, that is so wonderful. And it's like, but it's got my name on it, but like, I didn't think of that. They thought of that because it's something that we've talked about. Like, it's hitting our core value. It's hitting our values. And like what, in April, we're doing our first mission trip. So there's seven of us going down to Costa Rica, but every one of the team members are doing the fundraiser and help us raise the money to be able to do that. I think really the first charitable thing we did, you know, at the time with the dentistry from the heart. So we did like six events from that, and that kind of was just eye-opening for everyone, the need, first of all, but just the great goodwill it created in the community, just the good feeling it gave us. It was an exhausting day, but at the end of the day, like, wow, that was amazing, and got nothing for it at all. It was just, we really helped some people who otherwise wouldn't get home.
So last week I had two small groups of clients. I did this thing called the semi-private, and they didn't know what they were getting into, but I had created these 15 questions, and they were like questions I think you should ask at the halftime of your life, right? And so we were going through some of those questions, right? And, you know, some of them were funny. I thought they were going to get up and walk out the door for sure, you know, like, but so thinking about that and, you know, thinking about, okay, so you have this experience, right? So you go from a pretty small office, and your flagship office, give us kind of it's a beautiful office, right? So kind of describe, like, with, and I know you're probably going to be humble about this, but if I was a random dentist and I was walking by your office, right, I'm assuming they're going to be like, holy schmoly, right? Like, I think it's easy for you to forget that sometimes, right? Like, that, how blown away that they would be by that. So when you think about the experience of a patient walking into the office you have today versus the one you had 12 years ago, what are some of the, like, what stands out to you, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did get a very nice building. I mean, it's like, our contractor has it plastered on his van. He drives all over. Design Ergonomics has our office on there on their landing page on their website. So it's a beautiful office. And I heard one of my patients said, yeah, my son and I, we drove by, and my son said, why can't every building in Butler look like that?
But you really improved the town, right? I mean, there's a lot of
it was an old McDonald's that had been sitting here for about 3 years, and that's awesome. I mean, there were hypodermic needles in the parking lot. It was just a total eyesore. So they were very happy to see us renovate the space. And we built out half of the space, thinking it would take me 5 or 6 years to build it out. And a year and a half later, we had to build out the other half of the building. And like, I just can't wrap my head around it, but I actually need a bigger building. We have 8 hygienists here every day and 15 operatories. So we're kind of like, and they're booked out 8 months. So I got a problem. So
that's
unfortunately, I know a guy who gave me a good formula to figure out the next step.
It works out that if you build it and you do it right, they'll come, right? It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's hard to, so talk to me. So you've sent your team, you know, I know you've sent some of your kids to our teen event. Talk to me a little bit about the, you know, and as an observer, you know, and watching you, you know, like, one of the things that on my side that I would say about Paul is that, you know, getting to watch people sort of engage at a higher level and to see how impactful it is in their town or with their team. I mean, it's pretty incredible privilege for me to get to watch. And, you know, I don't always get to, you know, I think sometimes for both of us, it's easy to take that for granted, right? And to sort of say, okay, now here I am. But, and that's what part of this podcast is for us to reflect on, you know, how just the beauty of that and some of the processes. So how important has, you know, so let's talk about this idea that, you know, you talked about not having money that you wanted to be able to give to something, you know, from your generous heart. But let's talk about this. You seem to be like an active investor in people, right? So you've, if it's from your kids to whatever, but it seems like you really glommed onto that idea, like, hey, I'm going to invest in these people. And so how did that just naturally come, or did you get better at that over time? Or how would you describe developing that ability?
Good question. I mean, I'm the first doctor in my family, but there's lots of teachers in my family. So I think that definitely is a giving, like and when I graduated from school, like I got the award for the guy most likely to be a teacher. And that always is.
Okay. That's cool.
Something that's been important to me. Like, I like to watch people grow. And so, you know, a couple of the women that have worked for me, young assistants that I've trained, and I've sent them off to get more experience degree. So they're an AFTA degree, so expanded function duty system. Mm-hmm. So I paid for them to go to school. I have had 1, 2, 3, 4 girls come here that worked in high school for us as hygiene assistants that have 2 are graduated from hygiene school. One of them now works for us. And 3 that are in the hygiene school right now. And 2 students here last year that are going to go off to dental school. And again, it is. I definitely have a teacher's heart. I love to watch people grow. I took my 2 kids to the kids' events, but I also took 2 of my hygienist kids.
Good for you.
To the teams.
So powerful, events. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So would you consider yourself like a? So just so everyone kind of understands, right? There's this. I don't know. You call it like a Tony Robbins-esque personality. Rah, rah, right? How would you describe your, so you've been able to grow, like, are you that guy who comes in every day and you're like, let's do this? Or, so you're saying you have a more methodical, that's pretty powerful. So you were able to stay who you really are, be true to who you are, and develop the practice. Is that?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not the rah, rah guy. That'd be my wife. She's got that energy level. She was in sales. I was definitely more the A student, you know, stay below the radar, but, you know, just, you know, head down and get through what you got to get through. But I am always looking for opportunities to build people up and tell them that they're doing a good job. I'm not the rah-rah guy. So at our meetings, there's definitely guys in our, you know, our group and the CEO group, and there are definitely guys there, you know, that can get up in front of a room full of people and be very inspirational. I think I'm more of a, you know, keep things moving, but I'm not going to be your rah-rah.
I think in general, there's way more people that are not rah-rah people, by the way. So just for, I mean, you know, I think it's important that you don't, you know, have to be.
They know my heart. I mean, that's I think the most important thing, and that's what we talk about. And they always ask me to speak, and, you know, just begin, where am I? What am I thinking about? You know, what's and so we're just constantly going back to our values, and is this really what we stand for? You know, when something's, we try stuff and it doesn't always work. You know, and it's like, why didn't it work? Like, did we got to get back to what our core values were, and so we just spent a lot of time on that. It's about building our community and people work for us and our patients.
So do you think that every doctor has to go through this total infatuation with becoming clinically competent as part of their progression? Or can they learn the things you learned earlier? Can they can they learn that it's about what the patient wants? I mean, what do you think? Like when you talk to people, do you find them still generally obsessing with clinical competency, or what do you notice? Like with the people that work for you, does that?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, one of my associates that came here after, you know, being in 8 years, and she's definitely on that. She's going to the same centers I went to, and she's definitely, you know, that way, clinically minded. And you know, it's been a little eye-opening for her to go through our SI trainings and stuff. So you definitely see some light bulbs going off for her in terms of watching how her production changes as she's grasping concepts and stepping back and spending more time talking to the patient. I think there is a core competency that you need to get, and depending what it is that you want to do. I do higher end things. So yeah, you do, if I'm placing implants, things like that, you need some more advanced training. If you're, you know, just going to be doing some simple bread and butter kind of stuff, then, you know, you don't necessarily need to go down that road, and you can make a good living, because a couple of my associates, they're fine. Give me all your crowns and your dentures and I'm good. And they're doing pretty well.
It's interesting, right? That the, you know, if you think about it, and for people listening to this, you know, it's like that you end up, you know, and you described it, there's kind of like a circle around us, you know, and it may be the spouse or the family, or it may be that team member you've had for 25 years. And, you know, it's always interesting to me that, you know, there's kind of this battle about, you know, do we change the team or do we change? And so for everybody listening, I want to make sure you understand how that process goes. And it's really, you know, when, and it's funny, if you think about you sitting there and your wife saying to you, yeah, we're not going to hire anybody else, and then deciding to make a commitment, you know, I want to remind everybody that when you commit, something happens, right? And it's so magical, like, and it's hard to describe to people, but there's I don't care what it is, like the power, when you commit and you get that, like, yeah, it's a little nerve wracking and yeah, I'm not sure, but I'm committed, you know, it really makes that's the difference, you know, and not staying in a position of so-called comfort. You know, it's always shocking that somebody would stay in a comfort zone. I mean, if we rewound the film and you had stayed, like what do you see? Like you had just said, and now this wouldn't have happened obviously, but if you rewind the film 10 years ago and you say, you know what if I just would have put my head down, kept everything the same, do you think you'd have even made it this long? You think you would have gotten out of it, or what do you? I know that's a tough one, right? But
because about the time I joined you, there was a guy here in town that had a medical thing happen that he had to sell his practice, and he came into my office pretty much in tears, begging me to buy his practice, and that was like, I never want to be that guy. I want to know, like, that I put myself in a position that when it's time to turn off the lights or whatever it is, that I'm in a good position. And if I had stayed where I was, you know, if I think the standard formula is, you know, you sell your practice for 60% of your collections and, you know, hopefully there's someone who wants to buy your practice. And yeah, that just wasn't going to do it.
So 160-ish new patients a year to over 2,000. I mean, if you imagine if I'd have told you back then that you'd be getting 2,000 new patients, you imagine your brain just would have short-circuited or, right? So what do you think people, so let's talk about that. So, and I'm imagining I just say that to somebody and they go, I never want 2,000 patients. So what have you learned from getting out of the way and allowing you and your team to be more available to patients? I mean, what is that? Because I think that's why you had 2,000 patients, right? You're saying, come one, come all, we're going to accept you. And right. I mean, how is the impact of that? I got to imagine today, So you, like, you won an award, which I'm sure you were very uncomfortable with, for the entrepreneurial award for your county, and I know you had to give a talk. Mm-hmm. But that basically means that the light was shining on you a little bit, right? That's always an interesting spot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, I get the sense you don't naturally love that spot.
No, I don't love giving speeches. it was an honor. I mean, I know the people in that organization, so it meant a lot to me that they recognized what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
In the county. And again, we the generosity part was so important to us. And so, I mean, there's, you've said it over and over, like, well, my goal is to not have to say no to anyone when someone comes and asks me for, you know, to contribute to their thing. And it's, so I would like to sit back and look at how much money we've given away in the last 10 years, because I know it's a pretty significant amount.
But the sheer number of people. So how does somebody, you know, when you now look back at what you used to think about the 6 or 7 or 9 you were getting versus today, right? How was it just figuring out that this is really what service is, or what was it, a gradual like realization? I mean, what's, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so for the clinical guy out there, like, so as a dentist, when you're a new dentist and it takes you an hour to do a crown prep, and you find out the seasoned guy can do a crown prep in 5 minutes. Well, it's like, well, it's got to be a really crappy crown prep.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, he's figuring some stuff out that you haven't figured out. So you go to your first SI meeting where there's, you know, 100 offices there, and you're seeing 9 new patients a month, and someone says they're seeing 50 new patients a month. You're like, well, they can't be doing a good job.
You judge them, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, no, like, we have a really good system, because if you sit there and look at what you were doing in an hour and a half appointment and the person didn't even get their teeth cleaned, you know, it's like, all right. Yeah, there's something wrong with that. And so to figure out a system that gets people in the door, we've got 1,000 5-star Google reviews. So, I mean, it's not like people aren't feeling well served when they're here. And overall, I mean, it's not, I'm not getting, oh, that was like the best cleaning I've ever had. It's about how well they were treated, how they were listened to, how wonderful our people were, how everyone here was so smiling and warming and welcoming. And so there's a way to do it that isn't going to affect your clinical outcome. Like, we treat a lot of people really, really well, and they're telling us that we're doing a good job.
But to your point, the number one saboteur of everyone is judgment. So the natural reaction for anybody doing less is to judge. And not be curious, which is so fascinating, instead of being like, well, how the heck do you do that, right? So for everybody listening, you know, it's important you're catching yourself. And I have, like, same thing, just experiences in my life where, you know, somebody would say something to me and my brain couldn't wrap my, you know, its head around it, but I would just kind of remember it. And then later in life, you're like, oh yeah, sure. It turns out that was actually totally accurate, and it was me that was wrong. So let's talk about over the period of that 10 years, you leave that box and you come and you spend a few days, couple times a year. Sometimes you bring your team, sometimes you send your team, and you get out of the proverbial box, and then you go around these people and you get to relate with them and talk to them. How important is that? Now, when you think back in this journey, that connectivity with other successful people that are not in your actual market, right? So you have friends, I'm assuming, through our community that are all over the country. When you kind of think back on that, right, it's hard to find that in your hometown, isn't it? How does that differ? How do those friends kind of differ from, like, your peers in your actual town, right? Can you is there a point where they're hard to hang out with, or it gets a little tricky, or?
Yeah, I don't hang out with dentists. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple come in through the office, and they just can't wrap their head. Or it's probably like a caveman seeing electric lights for the first time. They just can't wrap their head around what we got going on here. Yeah, I mean, like our meetings, and it's interesting. So I went right into the 5X program,
Yeah.
and in hindsight, and I think you recognize this too, I probably wasn't ready for the 5X program. So
Yeah.
there were guys way ahead of me, but there were guys, about the same level, maybe even behind me. But everyone there is willing to share
Yeah.
with what they did. So in fact, I reached out to Michael Carpenter because I've got a question about something, and Michael puts me in touch with someone in his office. So the camaraderie there of being able to,
Good.
hey, we're going through something. I know you just went through this. Would you mind if my people talk to your people? Absolutely. Or when I was building this building, and it was a huge leap of faith. So I went from 5 operatories to a building that's going to have 15 operatories. I mean, I'm
It's a
sweating.
lot,
We're
yeah.
in Phoenix with a couple of the guys who one was just about to, take the plastic off his, and the other one's already done. So like, we've done it. It's going to be fine. Like, you're good. And yeah, say so what's right. And yeah, a lot of times you'll tell us stuff, and it's just like, I just cannot believe it
Yeah.
that works. But I've seen it. It's like, oh yeah, Dr. A did it, Dr. B did it, Dr.
Yeah.
C did it. And like you said, it's a timeless principle. It's not, you're not like, you're teaching me something, and then you'll sit there and give us examples. It's on a maybe a different scale. But it's completely relatable to what I'm trying to do in my business. It's like, well, yeah, well, he's got much more income than I do, but if you scale it back, like, he's going through the exact same
Yeah.
thing that I am.
Yeah,
And
we're all in the people business, right? If you want to be or not, right? So you end up in the money business, the people business, the service business. I mean, the truth is we're all, right, living in the same spot. It's just how you know, different titles, right? So, okay. So super helpful. Thank you so much. Any other thoughts, like, so let's say you've got a doctor out there who's listening to this, and like most of these people are not my clients, right? They've ended up on the podcast somehow. What do you like when somebody comes along and they ask you like, hey, what are the keys? I mean, do you have you fit have you been able to kind of have, and I'm assuming you've tried to help a lot of people that don't want help. I'm assuming that's happened to you, right? Or they say, well, I'll do anything but that, right? So taking those people aside, like any kind of just closing thoughts of if you were sort of talking, to your previous self, and well, how do you encourage them to see the world differently than they might today, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to keep going back to things you have told us over the years. I remember just, there are times where you're listening to you speak or someone speak, and they say one thing that just doesn't resonate with you, and so you like shut them off completely, and you lose so much value. So there's times that you said stuff that I wasn't ready to hear it, and but be able to sit through that meeting and pick up a bunch of other gems, and then sure enough, a year later, it's like, oh, that's what Jay was trying to tell me. Like, that would have saved me so much grief if I could have grabbed that, but I just wasn't able to get this. So just
That's
recognizing
good.
that you don't know everything, and that there are people out there that see the world maybe from a slightly different perspective. So like, to me, my hang up was money. Like, I am not good with money, and so that was a big barrier for me. So to be able to just overcome that. We talked about, your systems for money, like, really got me through COVID, where it's like, I wasn't very intentional about it, but intentionally like pushing money aside so that when COVID hit, it was like, thank you, Jay. Because again, and if you'd have told me that 10 years ago, you can put away this much money every week in these accounts, and I would never, like, no way. Like,
So what you're really saying is if you're getting advice from somebody and you agree with everything they're saying, it's probably not where you should be. Right? I mean, isn't that funny? Like you almost need to be concerned about that, right? If somebody's, if the only advice you're getting is you're great, you're the best, you're this, that's probably, it is funny, you think about that. If, and again, if a teacher, you know, teacher needs to be a little ahead. They can't always be right on the mark, but you don't want them to be back here. So that is funny. Mm-hmm. And that's great. Okay. Well, listen, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure having you as a client, getting to work with your team and your family. So we're, on behalf of everyone on my team, thank you so much for taking the time to hopefully help some other people change whatever it is that they're interested in changing. Thank you.
Hope that did help. But yeah, appreciate everything you guys have done for us too, Jay.
Thank you.